Well, greetings, sports fans. It's been a while since I was on the old podcasting microphone, at least 2 weeks. Today is the 7th of April. Shit, it may have been 4 weeks. Whoo. A month has gone by. Anyway, episode number 2 of my newest podcast series, Business Opportunities. That's what we're doing tonight. Now, Business Opportunities is designed to present implausible ideas as valid investment opportunities. Things you probably wouldn't really ever do, but they do have a sound and a sense to them that it might work, you know, business opportunities. So, in our first business opportunity, we covered the ant hammer concept, which was a means of large-scale, low-tech, hands-on employment for people predisposed to manual labor to kill fire ants in the Southeast. And, you know, at the conclusion of that particular opportunity, I really think you can employ, I don't know, 300,000 people in a seasonal capacity in the Southeast doing nothing but killing fire ants for 5 or 6 or 7 months out of the year. It put a pretty big dent in the fire ant population, as well as provide healthy outdoor exercise and a modest income for people who are physically able to do the job. I mean, obviously, if you weigh 500 freaking pounds, you're not going to be in any physical condition to get out in the hot Georgia sun and stomp up and down pastures all day, injecting 2 gallons of boiling water into fire ant mounds. Yeah, your heart won't take it. You're too big, you're too fat, you're disabled. So we don't have to worry about those kinds of people. But there are probably plenty of other people that would benefit from healthy outdoor activity, especially healthy outdoor activity that was civic in nature. Every fire ant mound you destroy keeps somebody from getting bit. You know, some piece of farmland from being ruined. Some dairy cattle from going mad in agony after 25 fire ant bites. And running breakneck across the pasture and crashing into a tree and killing herself, you know, in a fit of animal frenzy. You know. So that was last week. This week, we're going to try and explore a new concept called genetic drift. All right, genetic drift is a foodstuffs company that specializes in mutated produce. And when I say mutated, I mean the imperfect ear of corn is the one they're looking for. You know, the oddly shaped, misshapen one. That's the ear of corn that genetic drift looks for. To get a better understanding of this business concept, let me share with you some of the work I've done in the last 2 weeks. I went to North Carolina and installed a drive-in pallet rack system at one of the largest egg factories on the East Coast, if not, in fact, the largest. I mean, it may not be, but it sure could be. It was huge. They have 3 million chickens in the place. 3-point-something million chickens. The plant generates like 3 million eggs a day. You know, and 3 million eggs a day, that's a lot of damn eggs. Anyway, part of the QA process at the plant is to visually identify and eliminate any odd-looking eggs. I mean, did you know that not all eggs look like eggs? I found this. I mean, it's a logically intuitive, reasonable assumption to make that, you know, chickens are going to have mutations just as fast as anybody else, you know, and that maybe not every egg looks the same. You know, but it doesn't really come home until you're in a place where you have an opportunity to examine, oh, say, 3 million eggs in a day. You know, and out of 3 million eggs in a day, it appears that about 5 or 6 5-gallon buckets can be filled with the bizarro-looking eggs on a daily basis at this place. And, I mean, these are eggs with discolorations, speckled eggs, spotted eggs, eggs that aren't white. Unless they're looking at brown eggs, but this plant did white eggs. You know, I would suppose that you're going to have to get brown eggs from a brown chicken egg plant. But they also have surface imperfections. Some of them are completely round. Some of them are really oblong. Some of them are like, just have these weird, you know, just weird contortions for an egg. You would not think an egg could form in any shape other than what you're normally accustomed to seeing when you open that little styrofoam container at your local grocery store and check and see if any of the eggs in the container are cracked. You know, that actually is a friggin' miracle when you think about it. How in hell do they get eggs from a place in North Carolina all the way down to Atlanta without cracking one? Without cracking all of them, you know? It's not exactly a transportation loop that's, you know, filled with luxury. You know, it's in the back of a truck. Well, that's another story. Anyway, genetic drift would go to chicken plants like this and install on the QA process line where the QA chicks are currently working, people whose job is to grab the weird eggs and put them in a bag, you know, put them in a container. And you're not going to see one. You know, it's not something you got to do every minute or every second or every 3 seconds. You don't see that many. You know, but in the course of a day, you could probably, you could fill a 20-gallon container with mutant eggs, which genetic drift would immediately purchase and resell in urban markets to people who think that it's somehow superior to be eating a different kind of egg, or a weird piece of corn, or a cauliflower that looks like something, or carrots that have unusual characteristics. You know? In other words, it's another effort, and which is a fundamental mark of a good business opportunity. If you can mine a waste stream, you know, what the corporation, the individual, the businessman, whatever, he considers to be really ash and trash. If you can find items in his waste stream that actually are worth money, you know, but you gotta perform, a human has to look at it and make a decision. You see, you introduce that concept of selection in there. And that's what makes a business opportunity work. You know, I mean, that could be piecework, but only if mutant produce and strangely shaped and spotted eggs commanded a premium in price. Only if that happened. You know, so you really would depend upon a consumer base that has extra money for food. All right. Which means you got to go to the elites. You got to go to the snobby end of society. Or you could sell it for a tenth of what the other product's selling for and sell it to the really poor people. And common and savvy tells us that there certainly are far more poor people than rich people. Which customer base do we pursue? Difficult. So, genetic drift, that's business opportunity number two. And, you know, actually, as an aside, and this may be edited later, I really haven't done any editing of any type so far in these podcasts. And it's been 6 months, kids. I've been doing this for 6 months. Freaking amazing. But they're all unedited. It's all real time. You know, that was the original design parameter. 7, 8, 9, 10 minute slice of real time. Talking about the events of the day. You know, a simple concept of an audio diary that I've elected to share with every single person on the planet who has an internet connection. And 5,500 people have downloaded my various and sundry podcasts. I find that amazing. I've commented on it before. But in my life, my real life, my reality life, I do not know 5,500 people. I could not. If 5,500 people all showed up and said, hey, I've listened to your radio stuff, your podcasting stuff, I would be flabbergasted. It hasn't happened yet. And I think due to the medium, it probably never will. And yet, I'm enticed by the idea that, you know, it's an eternal record. Granted, that's predicated on the assumption that there will always be electricity and or, you know, energy of some type in order to read these types of files and generate the appropriate, generate sounds out of them. You know, records from the past. That's really what this is going to be. You know, if technological civilization continues on for another millennia, you know, another 1,000 years of progress and growth, or if retrograde destruction visits this planet and the humans that live on it, you know, in 1,000 years, somebody might actually be able to hear my voice coming to them across the gulfs, the aeons, the vast distance of time. This is a heady inducement for me to continue these things, to doing these dictations. But I've got to be able to craft a vehicle, you know, because I really want more people to hear what I have to say. I'm egocentric to that extent. And the reason for that is because I think some of the things I say, not everything I say, but some of the, I get gems out there, you know? I got little nuggets. And as my good friend Mr. Bludgeon says, even a blind squirrel occasionally finds a nut. You know, as long as he keeps looking. I think that's probably the operative phrase. Stick-to-itiveness. You know, continue to look. Continue to speculate. So I'm thinking like, you know, recycling some waste stream into a business that can support itself, at least the people who are picking out the funky looking eggs, and the people who are like putting the funky looking eggs in containers to ship them away to their ultimate destination is a retail establishment. Yeah, it's handwork. It's manual labor, you know. But you should be able to make a life for yourself if you don't do anything but manual labor. Now, I'm not saying there shouldn't be standards in manual labor. I think it should be considered closer to an art form than labor. You know, dance. A constant cycle of inspection and discovery and recovery and placement. You know, like, you're looking, and oh, there's a weird one. Oh, I got that one, didn't break. It's in a container. Oh, wait a minute, there's another weird one. Let's get that one, too. And then having to deal with the fact that for 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, maybe, you gotta look at all this same stuff coming down here. Nothing different coming down. Could probably build a machine that would do it a hell of a lot cheaper than a human being. I don't doubt that. You know, that has been a traditional solution that's been applied for, at least during my lifetime, the last 50 years, which is any place a human can do a job, let's put a machine there, because the machine will not complain. The machine won't want more money at the end of the next, you know, at the end of the year. The machine doesn't get sick, and doesn't call in because its kids are in a, you know, hospital or at the principal's office. The normal drama of human life is removed, you know, and people are less grounded as a result because they don't have routines that they can adhere to. And this makes for a dangerous societal mix. There's a need for manual labor in the United States of America, but it has to pay a living wage. Now, you know, it opens up another area of discussion, which is, what is a living wage? I mean, how much money should the average American have in his pocket? What should he be bringing home every week, you know, to divvy up between the wife and the kids and the people he owes money to? You know, what's a living wage? You know, what's a standard of living that we would consider minimal, or that we think most people would consider minimal? You know, hell, let's go for that. You know, that's a mobile polling group question. You know, what's the minimum standard? You know, what's a living wage? What's it take for you to live? You know, not like a king, but not like a slave. What's it take? $20 an hour? Need 25? $8 an hour to do it? 15 get the job done? 35? $10,000 an hour? You know, there's people out there that make that. Hell, that fucking Larry Summers cat. Yeah, this was in the news today. Larry Summers. All right, you know, here I'm talking about living wages. You know, what does it take to live? Larry did a talk for a bunch of bankers last year. And we're talking like maybe 90 minutes max. You know, I don't see how he stretched to an hour. You know, and that's with a 10-minute intro and a slideshow somewhere in the middle. But pulled down a cool $135,000, you know. If that's what he needs to have a... Is that his living wage? Got to be making $135,000 an hour? I mean, my God, what the hell is a guy got to pay for? Does he have a secret underground base somewhere in Bermuda? You know, is he planning to colonize Mars? You know, what is that kind of fucking money? All right, we're running up on 14 minutes. So I'm going to call it into episode number 2 of Business Opportunities, Genetic Drift, and some other stuff. It's on 7th of April. And with that, good night, and God bless.